For a lot of people, love isn't just a slogan.
What do you mean love? You mean a big lightning bolt to the heart where you can't eat and you can't work and you just run off and get married and make babies. The reason you haven't felt it is because it doesn't exist. What you call love was invented by guys like me to sell nylons.
Is that right?
Are you sure about it? You're born alone and you die alone, and this world just drops a bunch of rules on top of you to make you forget those facts, but I never forget. I'm living like there's no tomorrow, because there isn't one.
Well, for Mad Men on Sunday night, there will be no tomorrow. That's Don Draper, the lead character played by John Hamm. And for those of us who have stuck with it through the years, well, I feel like I have to watch it all the way to the end, even though the show kind of went away from my consciousness many weeks because I didn't know what was going on or really care about what these characters were doing. But still, I felt so fully invested, I had to watch the whole thing. My next guest did as well. His name is James Poniewozik. He's the TV critic for Time magazine, and he has written an epic history of Mad Men that is in this week's Time magazine and also on Time.com, their website. James, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Let's start with the beginning of the show. We see the opening animation of a man, supposedly, I guess we're supposed to believe that that's Don Draper, who is falling down the side of the building until he ends up on what looks to be a park bench. Has the story of Mad Men been the story of Don Draper falling through life?
I think it's been a story of decline. You know, I think Don has had ups and downs, so to speak. But, you know, it is kind of partly owing to its period and partly owing to who Don Draper is, you know, has kind of been the story of, you know, a time when people who were on top of the world discovered that the ground was giving way underneath them and you know, they were collapsing along with a lot of what they, you know, the life that they knew. So, yeah, in that sense, I don't think it's been, you know, a 100% downward trajectory for Don. But, you know, he was part of a group of guys who kind of ran the world and ran the world that he was in. And we've seen over the years, not only has, you know, have a lot of those structures fallen, you know, with the chaos of the 60s and so forth, but Don has lost his marriage and lost his business and, you know, lost or walked away from his job and home and so forth. So, you know, we've gotten to the point, I don't know what's going to happen in the finale, but where it is kind of, you know, it's just, he's just been deconstructed to down to him, one guy alone in the world.
I have to be honest, I have watched this show from the very beginning, and I was into it from the very beginning, but it felt to me like the show lost its way a little bit in the middle years, particularly when it started not giving us as much of Don the advertising man and sending him off on various other adventures that quite often included him forgetting that he was even in the advertising business and had to show up to work. Did you have a sense of that, too?
Well, I actually liked a lot of those stories outside the, you know, the advertising agency, but that's sort of a your mileage may vary kind of thing. I do think, you know, Mad Men sort of shared some DNA with The Sopranos. You know, Matthew Weiner, the creator, wrote for The Sopranos. In many ways, it owes some kinds of storytelling style, or you know, shares it in common with The Sopranos. And that was sort of a thing that people said about The Sopranos over the years too. That, you know, there was the mob story, and there was Tony's home and personal life story, and they sometimes intersected, and they sometimes were very separate. And a lot of people were more into the show when it focused on the mob, because that was where the action came from. In a sense, in Mad Men, the advertising agency kind of is the mob. You know, and when the stories are set around business, there is that dynamic driving them. But I think, as in The Sopranos, you ultimately can't separate the work life from the personal story that it's trying to tell. And I think probably the best episodes have brought those two together. But I don't see, you know, I don't see the stuff that happens outside the office as being you know, sort of separate from it, because I think that they're really, you know, you need them as parts of the whole.
But there were there were parts of The Sopranos that I think had the same problem. I didn't care about Meadow at school or AJ's problems. I wanted more of Tony and Big Pussy and all the people who are around him who are part of the mob, and of course Carmella as well. And I wonder if we ended up getting kind of that same formula, or do you think that Matthew Weiner and his writing staff said, you know what, we did the carousel slide projector, possibly the greatest commercial pitch in the history of television about advertising. I don't recall Larry Tate and Darren Stevens doing any really good pitches on Bewitched.
But
did they, is it possible that they said, look, we've already done great stuff with Don as that great advertising madman. Now we're going to look at other things.
Yeah, I think that is certainly a part. One thing that Matt Weiner told me one of the times I interviewed him was that, you know, they did, Mad Men had one of the best pilots I've ever seen for a drama. And that also concludes with a great pitch where he sells the Lucky Strike cigarette guys the It's Toasted line. And, you know, Matthew Weiner tells the story of how they did this and the network loved it. And they sort of came back and saying, well, what's the pitch going to be next episode? What's the pitch going to be the episode after that? And he was very determined to say, no, we're not going to, you know, it's not going to be like the CSI of advertising here. You know, it's not going to be building to a pitch every episode. You know, I think that's all by way of saying that this is a show that if it sees itself falling into some kind of pattern or routine, it tries to break it. It tries to change itself and shake things up. Necessarily, that means that sometimes a show like that is going to lose its way. You know, but I also think that that means that you've had things, that Mad Men doing things like some of the great sort of very experimental episodes that it did in the fifth season, like when, you know, Roger Sterling goes on his LSD trip, that you don't generally see long-established shows doing and shaking themselves up that way later. So yeah, I do think that there's a conscious decision that, like, we're not going to just repeat what people have liked before. And sometimes that means you're going to do some stuff that people don't like as much.
The Sopranos had a major impact on television dramas that we're still feeling to this day. What's the impact of Mad Men been on the television industry?
I would say number one, it's been it sort of ushered in. You know, it debuted just a month after The Sopranos, when everybody was wondering where's the next great TV drama going to come from, and you know where's going to be the home of great TV drama. So just in a practical sense, by establishing AMC as a place that could make ambitious dramas, it sort of heralded this spread that we've seen since then of very ambitious TV spreading beyond just HBO and pay cable to places like, you know, AMC, FX, Sundance Channel, you know, now Amazon, Netflix, and so forth. So I think that's been one practical effect of it. And, you know, I also think it kind of upped the ambitions or took them in a different direction from the way The Sopranos did. A way that I like to put it is that if The Sopranos was sort of aiming to the level of classic cinema, like The Godfather, I think Mad Men was trying to show that TV could aim to the level of classic literature, you know, like a John Cheever story. And the funny thing is that I'm not sure we've necessarily seen that many shows that have directly tried to imitate Mad Men. I think, in the way that we've seen a lot of shows that have tried to imitate Lost or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of sort of, you know, expanding the field of ambition of television, that's sort of been the broader, more general influence of it.
You've talked with Weiner a couple of times. Did he ever talk to you about the restrictions or freedoms that AMC gave him when he was starting this show?
Yeah, somewhat. You know, when he did the pilot, you know, he says that this was a case of something that was relatively, you know, uninterfered with or messed around with by the network in comparison to some of the, you know, stories of development hell that you hear around TV shows. One bit of change that came to it which was, I'm not going to say this came, you know, simply from AMC, but it seemed to be like a back and forth when they were developing it, was the idea that Don Draper should have a secret, which led to this whole sort of running thread of him having been Dick Whitman and taken on a secret identity, you know, being sort of the larger mystery that drove a lot of the series. But beyond that, I think Mad Men had a great advantage that it was starting out on a network that wasn't doing a lot of, you know, original drama and just wanted to get on the map. And much like, you know, HBO had not done a ton of drama, a couple of things, you know, before The Sopranos. And so that is often a situation that's fertile for the right creative person to exploit. You know, when you're the first person doing something in a field, on a channel or whatever, you sometimes have more freedom because, you know, there aren't these huge expectations to live up to. You know, he had the opportunity to set the bar.
Let's talk about the characters of Mad Men. Don Draper, of course, John Hamm's character, the central character in the role. But I always thought that the soul of the show was Peggy, who started out as Don's secretary and ended up, well, we don't know exactly where she's going to end up, but certainly in the last few episodes, we've seen her as a completely different person than she was at the beginning, more confident, certainly part of the evolving women's rights movement of the late 60s and into the early and mid 70s. I always felt that Elizabeth Moss's character was really what the show was about.
You know, I think in the same sense that, you know, as you started out saying this show has been about Don falling, it's also been about Peggy rising. You know, there's a lot of, and I think Matt Weiner writes the show this way, there's a lot of symmetry and parallelism in it. I think we identify with Peggy in one way just because she's closer to us. I mean, she's literally, as a younger person who's just starting out at the agency on her first day, on the first day of the show, she is closer to our time period. You know, she was born closer to our day, has more of our attitudes. You can see the future coming in through her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the relationship between Don and Peggy, sort of past and future, you know, mentor and protege, has been really key. And that's why, you know, I think it's especially significant that what is to me probably the best episode the series ever did, called The Suitcase, which was focused almost totally on Don and Peggy working on an ad campaign through one sort of long, tumultuous night, happened almost in the exact midpoint of the season, or of the series, in the middle of season four. You know, it was, you know, sort of, Don has been on the down escalator, she's been on the up escalator, and that was kind of the point where you saw them intersect. So, you know, who knows what will happen in the finale, but, you know, this could be pointing the way toward Peggy becoming the Don of a new generation.
Well, we do know what happens to some of the other characters. Don's ex-wife, Betty, now Betty Francis, ironically, once married to a man who was working to make Lucky Strikes, a huge cigarette brand. Now we know she ends up with lung cancer. Pete Campbell ends up with possibly the best life of all of these people after being an enormous weasel for several seasons. Joan Harris loses a lot of money essentially because of sexism at McCann. And are you happy with the way these characters' lives have played out over the show and where they're going and others that I haven't mentioned?
I think satisfied is more the word than happy. I mean, I don't think it would feel true to Mad Men to give everybody happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and seeing Joan walk out with half her money because the men at McCann Erickson are pigs to her, that's certainly not pleasing, and it's not happy. But, you know, Mad Men has been a show that's tried to be true to both human nature and the spirit of its times. And if Peggy is kind of, you know, an example of the triumph of women at the time, women didn't always triumph and didn't always triumph easily. So I think seeing justice and happy endings for every character on it would probably be very happy in the moment and would kind of feel unsatisfying in the long run.
There's also a fourth female character on the show who I have always found very, very intriguing, and that is Don and Betty's oldest child, Sally Draper, played by Kieran Shipka, who I think has really grown as an actress as the character has grown, don't you?
And that is one of those cases where the wrong actress casting the wrong person could really have made a huge difference. Because, you know, there are not that many actors that age who, you know, could have the maturity and who would continue to develop as a performer to you know, do some of the very difficult and sophisticated stuff that she's had to do on screen. So I think, you know, there's probably a strong argument to make that, you know, really ultimately Mad Men is the story of Sally. You know, it's a show that's so rich and well drawn out that, you know, you could kind of see it, a version of it that has any of the characters as a protagonist. And I guess that makes sense because, you know, to everybody, they're the protagonist of their own lives. What was it Don said to Sally in one episode this season? You know, you may not realize it, you may not like it, but you are me and your mother. You know, and I think that actress, Kieran Shipka, has done a fantastic job of, you know, giving us a little bit of Don and Betty through her, a little bit of John Hamm and January Jones, and really impressive for a child actress.
I agree. So we have great writing, we have great performances. There's also great attention to detail on Mad Men. In your Time magazine piece, you share a story about the props guy and cigarette butts. Would you tell my audience about that?
Oh, sure. It's just, I was touring the set and sitting down and talking to the props guy, actually the production manager, some of the crew people, and I just pointed out offhandedly how, you know, I'd noticed some cigarette butts kind of artfully lined up next to each other in an ashtray. And he said, it shouldn't be like that. I can tell you the exact theory of a cigarette butt. It should always be like crushed out and smashed because that's how you put out a cigarette butt when you ash it out. So, you know, we're going to have to go back and fix that. it was funny to see, but also totally typical because there really is such a determined level of detail, down to the point of things that you don't even see. I mean, I saw this for myself when I went through the set. If you've got a set of memos on a desk, they're typed on a typewriter, not, you know, printed off on a printer, and even the pages stacked underneath that you can't see are typed, and their philosophy staging the set this way is that, yeah, the audience may never see it, but the actors are going to see it. And that's part of creating a convincing world. It's just incredibly impressive. You know, I've been to a bunch of sets, but that's impressive to me.
Because the actors will know. Wow.
Because the actors will know because you're creating a sense of a reality that goes all the way through, you know? Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen in the last episode, do you?
I do not, no. There's always a lot of secrecy about Mad Men the past several seasons. They haven't sent critics episodes beyond the season premiere. And God knows they're holding this one down like Fort Knox. I've actually been incredibly impressed that, you know, they shot this a year ago, or at least, you know, last summer, something like that. There have been almost no leaks. You know, it's been airtight. You know, that wasn't the case when Lost shot its finale, when a lot of, you know, there generally tended to be spoilers floating around at some point with any highly anticipated finale like this. I got to hand it to them. Their whatever combination of security system and threats they use, they are working.
We call it a finale, which brings to mind other TV shows that actually worked up towards the finale and there was a big final story. But, of course, Weiner worked on The Sopranos, which didn't really have a finale in any way. It just kind of stopped. What do you expect what would you like to see on Sunday night with the big final episode rather than finale of Mad Men?
You know, I don't know if I have a list of things that I would like to see, because I think, you know, the show's always done best when it surprises me. I mean, so many of the scenes with Don and Peggy have been the show's best moments that I'm hoping we'll see them together again. But, you know, I don't know for sure that we will see them together again. I don't expect to see Mad Men do a cut to black like The Sopranos did, because that's just, that was something that fit the tone of that show.
Yep. And created
Mad
controversy
like
for years.
Something, you know, more beautiful and elegiac than that. Probably not dramatic. I don't think anybody's going to fall off a building. That's also not their style.
So when Don was testing the windows of his McCann office, it wasn't that he's going to push them out and be a jumper?
I tend to doubt it. You know, maybe that's your best sign that it's going to happen, but I would lay some money that's not going to happen.
No, I think if he was going to do that, he wouldn't have put that scene in.
It seemed like a little nod, a little wink, yeah.
It debuted on July 19th, 2007. It will come to an end on May 17th, 2015, almost 8 years. Call it 8 seasons or 7 seasons, with the last one split into 2, just like they did with Breaking Bad. It is one of the more historic TV series in history, and there is a great history of that show in Time magazine, both in the magazine and on the website, written by this gentleman right here, James Poniewozik. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.